Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Advent. If you have snoring, sleep apnea, or nasal breathing problems, go to AdventNose.com to schedule your appointment.
A little big. There's a ball that's fair into the left field corner. Moncada will score easily. Grandal around third. Here he comes. Relay throw to the plate. Save. Ball got away from Perez. It's 5-1.
Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays, 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
White Sox in first place. The Cubs, a recent five-game win streak, stopped after a disappointing loss to the Pirates, and the baseball season rolls on. Here to talk about it on Bernstein and Rahimi with Layla off today is Joe Sheehan. He of the Joe Sheehan newsletter and on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. Joe, what's going on, man? How are you?
Good, but Rahimi for Sheehan's a pretty bad trade, man. I hope you got a draft pick or something back.
Yeah, cash considerations or something to be named later, we can certainly hope. I was just looking at some of the White Sox numbers here and seeing sort of how they're doing this, and it's always nice when they get out to these big leads and then we're not bitching about managerial issues. But I don't think it's sustainable. They've got a 322 BABIP, of batting average of balls in play, to lead all of baseball, and they're 19th in hard contact rate. What does that say to you?
It's a bizarre offense. It leads the league in OBP and is last in home runs, which I never would have expected that from this team. Now, some of that is personnel changes, right? You've lost Jimenez, you've lost Robert, and that changes the shape of the offense. But it's really shocking to me to see how good they've been, third in the league in runs. I agree with you. I'm not sure the offense is sustainable. They basically have no bad hitters. Yasmani Grandal obviously hitting .113, but you know, 378 OBP, and it's about as bad a 378 OBP as you can have, but it's still a 378 OBP. And to me, that's really what's driving this offense. Everybody's getting on base, which this is not typically what we see out of the White Sox. So, you know, we'll see if it can be sustained. You know, there are no bad hitters too. That's the other thing. I mean, there's no, well, I'm sure we'll talk about the Cubs here, who are carrying a bunch of guys who just aren't doing anything. And you look at this White Sox offense, and it's generally, you know, the worst hitters are guys like Grandal and Eaton. And there's value in a nine-man lineup.
The fact that Andrew Vaughn has a higher or a lower slugging percentage than Nick Madrigal is just amazing to me. I mean, Vaughn's been good, but I thought there was more slug. I thought there was more pop in the bat. I didn't think this was just what we used to call, you know, warning track power, gap power. The fact that he just isn't showing that is a bit of a surprise to me.
It is a little bit. I mean, the no home runs this early, this deep into the season, but I think there are a few things in place here. One is he's learning a new position on the fly. He is making the jump essentially from Cal to the major leagues. He's, at least early in the season, wasn't getting the kind of consistent playing time that would help him develop as a hitter. Now, that's changed with, again, all of the injuries that the Sox have had. He's starting to get in the lineup every day. But you know, I just don't love the way he's been handled. And I think you got to give him a wide berth, given everything. And you know, the fact that he sustained the 350 OBP, and again, I go back to this, you know, it's hard to be a bad player with a 350 OBP. That's even with doing on-the-job training in left field and you know the other challenges. And I think the power will come. He's a good at-bat. I mean, he's really enjoyable to watch in the box. So he doesn't look overmatched. And I think the power will come.
You mentioned that we were going to talk about the Cubs, and we are, but the timing of that five-game winning streak and just the baseballiness of starting it against the Dodgers in that doubleheader and beating those three Dodgers pitchers, really just a classic scratch-your-head baseball kind of thing. They needed it, and they've gone from, ooh, this season could be sliding away, to they're probably in it for a while. That said, they start their purported ace against a Pirates team that's missing the bats of Ke'Bryan Hayes and Colin Moran, and they lose, and he has a non-competitive sort of weird first inning with the kind of contact that he's giving up. It was too bad, because that was one that you think you really kind of could, you know, keep your foot on the gas, and they couldn't do it.
Well, especially with Hendricks on the mound against that lineup, he's off to this terrible start. That's an opportunity to beat a bad team, to kind of start to create some momentum after the start against the Dodgers on Tuesday. I can't believe I just used the word momentum, but you know, talk about a guy
who's going to call you on it.
Talk about a guy who could have used two good starts. And you know, you look at Hendricks' numbers so far, and it's just a disaster. And you start to wonder, you know, we talk a lot about command and, you know, can you succeed without the raw tools that, you know, some of the other starters in the majors have? He's now down to about 86 miles an hour on his four seamer. And you wonder if he's just now below the floor of effectiveness. Can you actually be successful in the major leagues if you're that far below par? Our guy's just going to tee off. And if you look, I mean, his four-seamer is just getting absolutely obliterated this year. Hitters are hitting 460 off, and it's not just bad luck and BABIP. I mean, it's being squared up and hit very hard. And that's where I think the problem lay. And you know, last year it was 87. You know, you look back, and he's basically worked below 90, you know, for a long time now. It's just, is 86 just too slow for a guy to throw, to be able to be effective in the major leagues?
Yeah, it's scary when you put it that way. And it never fails that when he's really good, you get a segment of the baseball universe that loves to come out and say, see, velocity isn't everything. It's about pitching. It's about upsetting timing. And we all get that. We know that it can be fun to watch, and it can be cool to see somebody like Zach Davies have a great game like that. But I don't know why people feel so compelled to try to aggressively not understand how important velocity is. I don't know why people want to do that.
Well, I mean, velocity, yeah, if you have 80 command and 80 control, you can get away without great velocity. And that's what Hendricks has shown in recent years. But in addition to the decline in velocity this year, I mean, the command's just not there. It is, you watch him, or if you just look at the spray charts at Savant, and you can see that he's not putting the ball where he needs to put it. And that's, so now you have, you know, 20 velocity, well, we'll call it 30 velocity, and you know, 70 or 75 command, and that combination is going to get you knocked all over the ballpark. Like I said, the league's hitting 460 on his fastball. There's just no way to survive like that. So I'm not writing off Kyle Hendricks for the rest of his career. I don't mean it like that. But I guess I want to make the point that he's earned every inch of the six and change ERA that he has right now.
Musgrove, Rodon, Means, and Miley, four no-hitters. Madison Bumgarner threw a seven-inning no-hitter. Any significance to this current spate of no-hitters, or is it just that? Is it just a current spate of no-hitters?
You'll see, we've seen clusters before. I mean, we almost had two on Friday night, which had happened, was it the summer of 1990 we had that happen? We had 7-90, 7-91. I want to say we had six early in the 2000s. 2010s, I should say, a couple of years with six. You would expect that as strikeout rates rise and as BABIP fall, or batting or performance on contact, you know, both home runs on contact and batting average, you know, balls in play decline, it would increase on the margins the chance for no hitters. I think that 5 in 36 days or whatever it was on Friday is an extreme example of that. Like, we could go the rest of the year without a no hitter, it wouldn't be unusual. But yeah, the conditions of the game right now, especially with the deadened ball, are certainly suited to no hitters.
How deadened is the ball now that we are gathering data as quickly as we are?
You know, I don't want to answer that. I want to say that it's dead. We know it's deader. And you know, you make the argument that it's April, and we'll have to see how it performs in warmer weather. But I know, you know, Saris of The Athletic, Rob Arthur at Baseball Perspectives have been all over this beat. And I think it's a combination of the ball being slightly lighter, which means that it's more, you're talking to a dumb journalism major here, so I want to be careful. It's more prone to being knocked down by air resistance because it's lighter. Mm-hmm. And apparently the effects of that and drag have, and also the fact that this, I guess the way the seams are done now, it's easier for pitchers to get more spin. So all three of those things have made it harder for hitters this year. And again, let's see what happens. May has been, you know, a better hitting month than April was. We'll see what happens when the weather warms up. But if you ask me right now, I think it's maybe 50-50 that the league hits 240 this year. The lowest batting average in league history is 237, which is 1968. I think there's a real chance it stays under 240, which if you look historically, look, we talk about being baseball scene heads and loving pitchers duels and, you know, we don't need home runs. And you know what? Baseball does better when the scoring is closer to 9 runs a game. Baseball does better when the batting averages are 260 and above. People tune out baseball historically when offense is low. This is a real problem.
And I'm trying to figure out if it's just my observational bias, because if you follow Rob Friedman, Pitching Ninja, on Twitter, who is he's prolific and so skilled at posting videos of nastiness, and it's college pitchers, it's minor leaguers, it's everybody. And you start looking at these overlays that he does, and it used to be for me kind of a novelty, like, ooh, here's Yu Darvish's 16 pitches all coming out of his hand. Now it's like in game, every game. And it's just some relief pitcher who came up last year who you've kind of heard of. You're like, oh yeah, this guy. And he's showing you 95 up and 85 down and 50 feet to the plate. That ball is at an identical point. I mean, it's not just velocity. There is an overall level of nastiness. And I don't know if I'm just more aware of it now because it's in my feed and it's been there for the last couple of years, or this really is something that is bedeviling hitters.
There's a greater volume of pitchers who have that nastiness than ever before, because they're in the lab, they're shaping their pitches, they're thinking about their tunneling, they're working on moving their finger from here to here to get just the right spin and just the right break. Pitching is a science. I feel like that was a book 1,000 years ago, but pitching is probably more science than it's ever been before. And hitters, there's no comparable track for hitters to take to counter it. They're still standing in the same place, and all that's happening is pitchers are getting better and better at closing that gap from 66 to the plate. And it's just, hitters are, I can't blame hitters for striking out. I know there's a lot of people who say, well, just go the other way. Going the other way against a 93 mile an hour slider on the black, excuse me? No. There's this imbalance now. And there are a couple of ways you can look to fixing it. And baseball is certainly looking at those things right now. But in the interim, until we get to those changes, I'm not sure what stops. Because as you say, Dan, teams are just printing these guys who are reaching the majors, throwing 97 with spin, with a nasty breaker, and only being asked to throw 45 pitches a week. That's the biggest difference. We used to ask relievers and starters, for that matter, to throw a lot more pitches. Instead, now we just carry 14 pitchers and distribute that workload so these guys can go max effort all the time.
The strangest baseball story right now to me is in a year where we came in, the offseason was all about the NL West, and it was about the arms race between the Padres and the Dodgers, and just seeing these teams just girding their loins for battle, and then having it come through with some just hellacious early season games. The Giants are 20-14 and leading that division. What the hell?
It's been a very good story. You kind of dig in. I looked at them last week. Their pitchers are allowing incredibly weak contact, which has enabled them to have great defense on balls in play. So, you know, no team in baseball is turning balls in play into outs better than the Giants are. And you combine that with, you know, some of the things they did last year on offense, kind of rehabilitating, you know, the veteran hitters, journeyman hitters who had gone nowhere. It's kind of a different mix this year. They've traded for Mike Kaufman, and Mike Mistrzemski's been out for a little bit with injuries. He just came back. But it's the same thing. Plus, Buster Posey's come back and played at the MVP level. I mean, it's a lot of things going right again on offense, and I think you got to give the coaching staff there a lot of credit for what they've done on offense. And then, you know, the veteran starters they have, you look at what they've gotten out of Gausman. There was a great profile on Pitcher List. I want to recommend Alex Fast's site for a great thing on what Gausman's doing to be more effective. What the work they've gotten at Cueto when he's been healthy, you know, Anibal Sanchez showing up, you know, he hasn't been healthy for a couple of years, and him doing good work for them. So I don't think they can hold on. I mean, you talk about basically everything's gone wrong for the Dodgers and Padres for 6 weeks. They're still over 500. They still have plus run differentials. I mean, they still have the core talent that's going to end up winning that division. But yeah, I think Giants could end up like the Brewers, where they never really go into a rebuild and they emerge on the other side of it as a contender.
Well, it's actually a good for baseball too, those stories, because it does incentivize, you know, giving money to veteran players who might help you win games, which I know there's some owners saying, what the hell you say?
Well, the problem is that historically, that hasn't been shown to bring people to the ballpark. this all goes back 30 years of research where we said that, you know, if you win from 70, the difference between winning 71 games and 79 games made very little difference to your bottom line. And I think it's different in different markets. Like you look at, you know, the attendance, you need to be a good team to start bringing people to the park. But if you're in San Francisco, generally people are going to go to that park no matter what. Like, that's not really as big a factor. Yeah, you're going to draw better when you're good, but that park is the attraction. You know, you've got a large market there in San Francisco. You're going to be able to bring people there. So I think that makes more sense in a place where you know you're going to get the return if you do go from 71 to 79 wins. But historically, again, it's the fans driving the behavior. If there was a linear relationship between winning 64, 65, 66, 67 wins all the way up to contention, teams would behave differently. But we know that those 20 wins from 60 to 80 just don't move the needle.
Before we let you go, there's an interesting note as you're talking about the Giants' defense. And you mentioned one of the stats. It was lowest batting average of balls in play allowed on fly balls this year. The Giants are at .044. Look who's tied for fourth best after losing two of their starters and losing maybe one of the top three defensive center fielders in the game. The White Sox are at 0.74. Obviously, without Luis Robert there, that number is certainly going to change. But I was surprised to see how good the outfield defense has been.
Without looking into it, I'd say that, you know, Yvonne's been out there some, but playing a lot of Hamilton. I'd have to check to see Lourdes Garcia's outfield numbers. That probably hasn't hurt it either. And again, it probably has to do with that pitching staff. You know, Carlos Rodon, Lance Lynn was hurt. He's back now. Giolito and Keiko haven't actually pitched all that well, and this team leads the league in ERA. So I think you're looking at getting that weak contact being a big part of it. And you've got that power bullpen that's hard to square up. The overall numbers aren't great right now. I think by the time we get to the summer, that Sox bullpen is going to end up being one of the big stories.
Are the Yankees back?
They never went away. I mean, people 5-10, people were throwing themselves off buildings here. No, they're still going to be a bit of a hit or miss offense. It is a lot of walks, a lot of power, not a lot of hits. So that'll look bad when it's not going well. But I think one of the things that you're going to see with them is the pitching really start to take over. They're juggling the back of that rotation, but Kluber's starting to come around. You know, Taillon, not a great start against the Nationals, with 3 runs in 6 innings, but that'll be fine. They've got depth. Jordan Montgomery has been a really good comeback story. They started to use Domingo Herman. They still got Davey Garcia, who I love, and I think he'll be a big story in the second half. So this is going to be, you think about Judge and Stanton and the Yankee pinstripes and all the home runs, but to me, this is going to be a pitching-driven team this year.
Aren't they all? My God, the way this league is about 240 batting average.
2021 baseball, yeah.
Right. Joe Sheehan, thank you. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, Dan.
That's Joe Sheehan. Make sure you sign up for the Joe Sheehan newsletter, an absolutely indispensable piece of your baseball experience. Football next. Matt Nagy was on Ross Tucker's podcast talking about his job status and standing and how he feels about it and how he approaches it and where he thinks he is. And also, I want you to hear some fascinating stuff from Justin Fields during an ESPN Films documentary, a short one. It's called Hey Rookie, Welcome to the NFL. And he was one of those mic'd up on draft night, and you get to hear his unvarnished reaction to what happened to over the course of that evening and how he felt about it, etc. So I think we get a window into some of his motivation. That's all coming up. Some Bears talk next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Are the Bears in win now mode, or are they in development mode, or both?
No, I would say both. We feel like right now with this roster that we've built over the last several years, that we really believe that right now we're in a great position to go out and win a lot of games and win right now. With that said, we are building somewhat of a younger roster now where we as a coaching staff have to be able to develop these players that we're drafting. So there'll be a great plan for that, but we're so excited for the future and the 2021 season. Right now, you know, as we speak, this morning, I'm putting together schedules of the off-season program and how that's going to work with all the new rules, getting into training camp and how that's going to be. But there's an excitement. There's a really good vibe right now in our building. And we're right there where we need to be. And we have a great mix of veteran leaders and young guys. And so for me and our coaching staff, that's why we do this thing. And it's just very important that our guys understand that. And anything can happen. So we're ready to rock and roll.
All right, I want you to both rock and roll this season. Trying to balance the whole winning now and making sure you're husbanding resources for the future. It's never the easiest thing to do, but that is Bears head coach Matt Nagy. He was on the podcast of Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider and friend of the show and the station, and there was more to it. Because Tucker asked Nagy directly, especially coming off of last year and after that six-game losing streak that everybody thought was just awesome. Hey, six-game losing streak. It didn't derail the season. We still kind of made the pretend playoffs. Hey, well, he asked him directly about how hot his seat is and how he feels relative stability or not.
You know, when you take this position, one of 32 positions in the NFL like I did, it's never all peaches and cream and rosy. There's always going to be times where you hit some adversity and you get challenged and people, not everybody's going to like you and people are going to disagree with things that you do and things that you say. But I go back to the core of who I am and the people that have surrounded me and supported me from day one and just kind of like you and I were just talking about. And I rely on that. And I completely understand that in this business, there's a lot of people that have been in my situation, but now it's all about how do you handle it? You know, do you start placing blame? Do you start looking for different reasons as to why you're in this position? Or you just, you know, knuckle up and say, let's go, man. Let's stay positive. Let's stay together. Let's fight through this thing together, meaning our city, our fans, our organization, our players, coaches. And that's what we're going to do. And so now here we are with a great opportunity in front of us to do this thing together. And in the end, who knows which way it's going to go. But I know this, we're going to have fun doing it. And we're going to do everything we can to get this thing back on track and continue to win and get this organization to the top.
That's how he's kept his job, because that's real. He believes that stuff. I don't think he's phony. I don't. I think he means it. And I don't think it's all an act. But I know that his bosses are convinced that it means he remains the guy to be trusted to do this. So the guy he's going to have to rely on if this all is good, regardless of what he thinks about Andy Dalton, the guy that matters, the most important person in the Bears organization right now, is their rookie quarterback, Justin Fields. And ESPN Films put a piece together, and it was called Hey Rookie, Welcome to the NFL. And on draft night, they followed around four guys. It was Kyle Pitts, Justin Fields, Micah Parsons, and J.C. Horn. So we put a chunk of sound together to hear sort of the profile on Fields and some of what he went through throughout the evening and how it all went down with him sliding down the draft board, maybe perhaps farther than he once thought, and what that may mean for his motivation. So check this out.
Yeah, who knows coming where I go, regardless. Fun out of, like, you know, see where you're going to go, so.
Three quarterbacks were chosen with the top three picks. Justin Fields, the two-time Big Ten Offensive Player of the Year, waits to hear his name called.
It's not the Broncos, because they would have called by now.
We shall see.
The Denver Broncos select Pat Surtain, Jr., defensive back, Alabama.
Right now, Lewis, can we imagine that the phones are busy in places like Foxborough, Chicago?
Well, I think it's getting real interesting right now. Justin Fields, Matt Jones, it's probably time for someone to go get one of those guys.
Who's got the most upside of any of these quarterbacks after Trevor Lawrence? To me, it's Justin Fields. For me, Justin Fields is going to be a steal coming off the board at some point within the next few picks.
On draft night, things happen fast and furiously. The Chicago Bears need a quarterback and trade up from pick 20 to 11.
Oh, Chicago just traded. Oh, he's going down.
Yeah, they're coming to get Fields. That'd be the best play for them.
That'd be the best. That'd make the most sense.
They're coming to get Fields. They need a quarterback.
Hello?
Justin. How you doing, man?
Oh, what's up, coach? How you doing? Doing good. How about you?
I'm ready to be a Chicago Bear.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's go, man.
Let's do it.
Let's go, man.
Yes, sir.
All those talks and just where,
yes, sir. Let's do it.
Where you've been, and this is your time. And we're excited as heck to get here. And, man, I'm just so happy for you and your family. We worked hard to get to this point, and now it's time to go.
All right, Coach. Sounds good.
Hey, good work, fellas.
Who would have thought? Chicago.
With the 11th pick, my Chicago Bears select Justin Fields, quarterback of Ohio State.
He never lost a game in the Big Ten. He threw 63 touchdowns and ran for 15 more in his 2 years at Ohio State. Justin Fields has superstar potential. He's headed to Chicago where they desperately need him.
I'm ready to work. That's it. I'm ready to work. I don't need to talk much. I don't. There's been too much talking lately, so I'm just ready to work. That's it. Nothing else, just work. Happy, though. I'm happy for sure. It really hasn't hit me yet, so.
I don't know how happy he sounds. Too much talking. Too much. What did he mean by that? Too much talking. I'm happy, though. That sounded like a guy going through every next pick and watching other names get called. And I don't know if the assumption now is prove everybody wrong and what that's going to mean if he's sitting there with that earpiece in and a baseball hat on watching Andy Dalton sort of efficiency his way around the field. I don't know, but everybody kind of knew what was going on as it was going on, but that it didn't. Let's do it. Let's go. Let's do it. Did that sound awkward to you?
Yes, it was 100% bizarre.
Yeah, I found that awkward.
He also, if you remember, when they showed him getting drafted on TV, he didn't look happy.
No, that's his demeanor,
yeah,
though.
Like,
he doesn't look that way after you know, throwing a 70-yard touchdown pass. He's kind of a chill dude.
Who wouldn't want to be the quarterback for the Bears? What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong as they show the grainy photo of Sid Luckman that curses everybody? I mean, okay, all right. I mean, Nagy's just, he really is a true believer, isn't he?
Ready to be a Chicago Bear?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's go, man.
Let's do it.
Let's go, man.
Yes, sir.
Did he say let's go, man, twice, or did you loop that?
No, that was twice, and I had to go back and like rewatch it too. I'm like, that was just, that's what I'm saying. Like, it was just a very bizarre interaction between those two.
Let's go, man. Like, hey, Quentin, you fired up? I mean, it's, I don't know. These guys get weird that way, and I don't know if
hello?
Anybody...
Justin, hey, how you doing, man?
How's it going, man? Hey, Mr. Hand, if it's my time and your time, that kind of makes it our time, doesn't it? That was, okay. It just, it sounded a little less than sort of fully excited on board. It sounds like Justin Fields is really kind of taking it all in, assessing his current professional situation.
The other thing that made this bizarre, Dan,
yeah,
is the prank call that Justin Fields got right before the number 4 pick.
He was prank called?
Some people may have got his number from the internet or whatever, but yes, at that very time, he was prank called right before the number 4 pick.
He's headed to Chicago where they desperately need him.
I'm ready to work. That's it. I'm ready to work. I don't need to talk much. I don't. There's been too much talking lately, so I'm just ready to work. That's it. Nothing else, just work. Happy, though. I'm happy, for sure. It really hasn't hit me yet. So.
We've never had him go 4-for-4. The Falcons about to make a pick.
Could it be Justin Fields? I mean, the kid from Georgia before he came to this state to play his college ball.
Yeah, who's calling my phone right now? Hello? Yes, people keep getting my number, right?
That's like when Chris Bryant said that somebody said he was traded to the Mets. Like, someone, that's weird.
Oh, yeah. He got a text saying, welcome to New York, right? Wasn't that the thing Bryant got this offseason?
Yeah, Bryant, he got pranked too. And then Justin Fields got a call like right before that. That sucks.
That's horrible. Weird. Like, the most stressed out you've probably ever been in your life waiting for that draft call. And some pud calls you. Can I say pud? Yeah, I'm going to say pud.
I think you can.
Somebody calls you on the radio, on the phone, and just makes you feel awful. Ugh.
Now, had you said PUD on the BBC, that would be different because that would be short for pudding, which would be a black pudding or a white pudding, which actually would have been on brand for you, Jay Zawoski. If people don't know what I'm talking about, you're going to want to keep it here because I guess we're going to hear the story of how it happened, and then we're going to hear the actual appearance. But Jay Zawoski was on BBC Radio in England as an expert on the return of Wendy's to the UK. That's all I'm going to tell you. They said, wait, Wendy's is coming back to London and to the UK. Who should we have on to talk about this? Wait a second. It must be Jay Zawoski. And the producer called him and they put him on, and he was the international fast food expert representing the United States of America. And I'm not making it up. It's real. It happened. And you'll hear it next on the Midday Midway on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
It's Midday Midway time. We began the show digesting the baseball weekend, some of the good and bad for the Cubs and a lot of the good for the White Sox. Also talked to Joe Sheehan about baseball things. And then we heard from both Matt Nagy and Justin Fields, a decidedly unenthusiastic Justin Fields. A texter pointed out that some of his first comments were everything happens for a reason. He says that's what you say after your house gets hit by a tornado, not after you get drafted into the NFL by the Bears. Interesting stuff. And also at some point, we've got to go through what Bob Baffert is doing. You saw that his Derby-winning horse tested positive for too much of a steroid, and he went on Fox News and says the horse is a victim of cancel culture, and then he said the same thing on the Dan Patrick Show, and apparently his excuse for this one, he's had a litany of excuses for all of these positive drug tests that have come up for his various horses. His most recent one, he had a horse test positive for lidocaine, and he said it's because one of the grooms had a Salonpas patch on that somehow that leached into the horse. There was another test that he said one of his horses that was disqualified had feed that had Jimson weed in it, and this is his excuse now. He says this positive test was created by one of the grooms urinating in the stall after the groom had been taking cough medicine and the horse ate some of the hay. At what point are you not allowed to keep doing this and have people believe you? But the best part is now woke cancel culture has come for his horse.
What?
It's too good. Oh, my God. Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. With a straight face, cancel culture has come for a horse. Not parody. That's not why you called. All right. So, Jay, how did this happen? How did you end up as a U.S. fast food expert on the British Broadcasting Channel?
Yesterday, I was at a family party for Mother's Day and just checked my phone, as I do every Sunday as I get the Sunday anxiety. And I saw that a producer from the BBC had just added me on Twitter because I was not following her, obviously. So it just went to my at mentions, said, I'm wondering if we can reach out for an interview on the BBC. So I sent her a DM and just said, sure, what are you looking for? And they said, Wendy's is coming to the UK. We saw your podcast and thought you might be interested. So I said, yes, you found the right guy. I'm happy to do it. So it was a very brief phone interview, but it's funny. I'm trying to think, what am I going to say about Wendy's? But they had their questions lined up. They had done their work.
Well, my favorite part of this is that before they went to you, they yes. were energetically discussing the intricacies of British politics and the seats being lost by the Labour Party and the building of that government. And then they break and they come back with Jay Zawoski talking Wendy's.
They didn't break.
Oh, they didn't break?
It went from that to me. And the woman, it was so funny. The woman said, well, what about voter fraud? And they laughed her off the air. and said, okay, we're going to move on to Wendy's now. I'm like, oh, it's the same thing across the world. So that's good. It's good to see that the same problems are happening everywhere and it's not just here. But
all right,
yeah, so, there was no interlude between, there wasn't even a live read or anything. It was the Labor Party to Wendy's in the matter of 5 seconds.
Well, let's hear it. This is BBC Radio and our own Jay Zawoski.
Let's talk about Wendy's now, shall we? The burger chain, America's second largest burger chain, is returning to the UK after 20 years. Famous for square burgers, it has plans for up to 400 outlets nationwide, creating at least 12,000 jobs. So what's the appeal of Wendy's? Jay Zawoski is the host of I'm Fat podcast. Hello, Jay.
Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Are you fat, or is that just the title?
I am absolutely fat.
Right, well, so am I. Good to talk to you.
You too.
What is it about Wendy's, then? What's the appeal in the U.S.?
Well, here, I'll tell you the truth. And you mentioned, as you were bringing me in, and I appreciate you having me on, that they're the second biggest burger chain. But they are pretty much, by consensus, the best burger in the American fast food landscape. They have the best hamburger or cheeseburger you can get. McDonald's is by far the most popular because of convenience and because of how many locations there are. But we all kind of agree, us fat Americans all sort of agree that Wendy's is the best.
Why? What's the difference?
I think just the quality of the meat.
Subjective, isn't it?
I think the quality of the meat is better, or at least seems better. It's a thicker beef patty. And they also offer, aside from the burgers, their spicy chicken sandwiches are delicious. Obviously, the Frosty is their flagship dessert. And you can, a little tip for those that have never had Wendy's before, dip your French fries into the Frosty. And that's a sweet and salty delight you've probably never had before. So that's something that a lot of people do here in the U.S.
And let's talk about the business model. Why did it leave 20 years ago? And why is it coming back now?
I couldn't tell you why it left the UK. I would assume it would be just because of lack of popularity. But what I like about Wendy's in the States is they do their own thing, and they take pride in the quality of their food. It's not so much about being the cheapest or being the fastest, but it's the best, and it's the best quality. So, while, again, McDonald's is more popular, Wendy's is better. It costs a little more, but it's just overall better food, top to bottom.
What are the burger wars like in America at the moment? Or, have they all learned to deal with each other and live with each other? All these big
chains.
What's
funny is, what's happening now, the burger wars have shifted to the chicken wars. Now everyone is coming out with a breaded or fried chicken sandwich, and that's the new war. Everyone's trying to outdo one another with the chicken sandwich. And we have a chain here called Popeyes, which is all fried chicken. That is they're reigning right now. That's the king of the chicken sandwich, and everyone else is trying to beat them. So McDonald's has come out with theirs, and Burger King's come out with theirs. But the second to Popeyes is Wendy's. Wendy's spicy chicken sandwich is excellent. And when I go to Wendy's, that's what I get every time.
Is KFC not the dominant brand for chicken?
I have to say, just based on my experience here, I live in the Chicago area. KFC's fallen off a little bit in terms of quality and in terms of consistency. And Popeyes has reigned supreme as the best chicken place. I think it's okay. Not even really close in terms of competition. But KFC, they know what they're doing. They've been doing it for a long time. But the best chicken sandwiches go to Popeyes and Wendy's.
Jay, thank you very much indeed. Jay Zawoski, host of the I'm Fat podcast.
That was awesome.
It's so dumb.
What an interesting accent he has, too. I can't quite, I don't know some of the subsets of the accents well enough to place that. But that's a very specific regional accent that he has. The burger chins. And when he's trying to say burger chains, and he says burger chins. And I'm thinking, well, burger chins, possible, right?
Oh, I have a couple, yes.
Which burger chin? I mean, are you fat?
I am absolutely fat.
Questioning your fat credentials. I mean, that hints at your very existence. How dare he?
Well, he wanted to make sure I was legit. It says on here, it's Stephen Nolan is his name, by the way. It says on his bio, Belfast/Manchester.
Belfast and Manchester. Okay.
Yeah, so that's maybe some combo of that. And yeah, I will say, Stephen, too, he is fat.
He is, okay.
He was honest about it. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I couldn't quite place it. I couldn't tell if that was Irish or English or what that was. I guess it is some mixture of both.
I'm just glad I went to college and spent thousands of dollars to be famous and be a fat correspondent around the world, just as I dreamed it up.
Oh, it's amazing. And then a lot of people are saying on the text line that Culver's is going to be mad at you for saying that Wendy's is the best quality burger.
I don't consider Culver's as one of the fast food giants. It's great. And I agree. Culver's is the best of all that. But it's not even nationwide yet. So I didn't want to blow their minds by adding Culver's into the mix. Because I don't think they have Popeyes out there yet.
No, they also seem closer to fast casual to me for some reason. Like, yeah, Culver's is a place that almost is at the kind of higher end level, close to like a Panera or a Chipotle kind of thing.
I agree. I would think that would be that. That's a good way to put it, because it's not McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, etc. It's a step above or below, however you're ranking.
I would
say,
however
you're looking at it, it's above in quality.
Above,
for sure.
Right. I think when you're talking about a place that does like a legitimate walleye fillet at times, like, you know, and it's good.
It is so good.
Yup.
And they've got, what's the other one they have there? It's not just a walleye. They've got another fish. Anyway, it's delicious. They always have it around Lent, and I make sure I go at least once or twice because it's as good as you can get at a supper club in Door County. I'm telling you, their fish there is incredible.
That's just the most random thing. I love that. I love when worlds collide almost literally that way. And it's like he seemed so incredulous that because you know how popular KFC is there.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I mean, it's ridiculously popular there.
And it was just such a... So the request came to me on Twitter. It just says, "Hi, Jay. Sarah here at the BBC. Could you send me a DM? It's about an interview." And my mind is racing. What in the world could they possibly be asking me about on the BBC? Maybe they have the wrong guy, because I always get tagged in tweets when people are trying to tweet at Jay-Z.
Right.
"Hey, Jay-Z, check out my mixtape." Like, wow, it was really great. Oh, you're not the Jay-Z that I thought you were. No, I'm not. I'm the original. Damn it.
No, you're bigger.
Well, correct.
I am absolutely fat.
That was so good. I'm so glad we did that. That is great. And you're right. If they love KFC, could you imagine what would happen if Popeyes went over there and all of a sudden be like, wait a second.
You know what? I just got sent a story on Twitter that Popeyes is indeed headed to the UK. So the chicken wars are moving overseas.
Oh, we need to set aside some time for that, because if they've had nothing but KFC until an entire nation hasn't had Popeyes before, look out.
Should I call them with breaking news?
They
like
have
George
no
Offen
idea.
Back in the day? Kiddo, it's Jay Zawoski.
Hey, kiddo.
Popeyes is coming to the UK. Put me on.
And then he ends up saying, "George Offman, Sports Radio 800. Remember the out cues where he forgot what station he was on? Awesome. Great stuff. Check out George's podcast, by the way. Also really, really good stuff. Tell Me a Story I Didn't Know. Very, very popular. Taking the World by Storm. When we come back, Russ Dorsey gives us the latest on the Cubs, because it was despite a disappointing loss yesterday, they were able to put themselves right back in some semblance of contention, even though it looks like the Cardinals are threatening to pull away for a bit here. So we'll talk all things Cubs baseball with Russ next on The Score.